From the KTO Newsroom, I'm Jamie Deep. Thanks for tuning in. An Alaska foster youth advocacy organization is suing the State Office of Children's Services for allegedly failing to provide food and necessities for older youth in their care. The lawsuit by Facing Foster Care in Alaska claims foster youth placed in shelters or college dormitories don't receive enough money for food or basic needs like they would if they were in a home placement with a family. Facing Foster Care Director Amanda Mativier says for years she's heard complaints from foster youth that they cannot afford to buy enough food or other basic necessities.
For a young person in the dorm who needs transportation to a therapy appointment, the state has a duty to cover that cost. When the commons close during winter break and there's no meal plan, we hear from those youth who say, I don't know how I'm going to eat during winter break.
Alaska foster youth 16 years and older get a small stipend to help with transitioning to adulthood for things like getting a driver's license. But Mativier says the stipend amounts to a small fraction of more than $1,000 a month that foster families get to provide food and necessities. Facing Foster Care has provided gift cards to cover transportation and food outside of meal plans and shelter meals, according to the lawsuit. The Office of Children's Services declined an interview for this story, but an official with OCS wrote in an email that they routinely offer food and clothing vouchers, bus passes, and other transportation assistance, and that young adults have access to the same funding streams as younger children. Mativier says her organization's youth board works with OCS and has brought up the issue multiple times without resolution. She says some other states have better systems to provide stipends to youth living independently as they transition out of foster care.
As a state, we've continued to see a decline in foster homes. We've continued to see challenges with workforce in the child welfare system, and those things are not going to improve overnight, and these youth have needs right now. And this would be a pretty simple way to solve that, right?
As of today, there were no hearings set yet in the case. Governor Mike Dunleavy says he'll soon propose a statewide sales tax as part of his larger plan to stabilize the state's finances.
There will be a temporary seasonal sales tax concept put forth for discussion with the legislature.
Dunleavy made the comments during a cabinet meeting live streamed on his Facebook page today. At the meeting, Dunleavy and the state's 15 department commissioners outlined their accomplishments over the past 7 years. Dunleavy says a fiscal plan, along with moves to advance a natural gas pipeline from the North Slope, are his top two priorities for the legislative session that began Tuesday. Dunleavy has been tight-lipped about the specifics of his plan. The political news site The Alaska Landmine reported Tuesday that the plan would include a seasonal sales tax, a limit on government spending, changes to oil taxes, and a new formula for the permanent fund dividend. During the meeting, Dunleavy said he planned to start rolling out his fiscal plan next week. A required 10-year plan released alongside his budget in December identified some $1.6 billion in unspecified new annual revenues starting in July 2027. Dunleavy says he expects the plan to raise revenues, quote, pretty close to that mark.
The proposal in the fiscal plan has multiple components, and basically what it is, it's a roadmap to inject stability, especially over the next 5 years when revenue is not quite what it'll be on the years out.
Dunleavy emphasized that most of the measures he'd propose would serve as a temporary half-decade bridge. After 5 years, he expects state revenues to rebound thanks to increased oil production, growth in the permanent fund, and the possible natural gas pipeline. Lawmakers have said they'll consider Dunleavy's proposals, but it's unclear if a sales tax and other components of Dunleavy's plans will have enough support to pass the state House and Senate. Dunleavy privately told lawmakers in 2023 he planned to introduce a sales tax, but he ultimately did not. And Alaska has lost about a third of its U.S. Forest Service employees in the past year due to federal staffing cuts led by the now-defunct Department of Government Efficiency, or DOGE. Before that, the agency had around 700 Alaska-based staff. This month, the agency told KTOO 467 remain. Leading this workforce influx is Jerry Ingersoll, the U.S. Forest Service's acting regional forester for Alaska, covering both the Chugach and the Tongass National Forests. He took on the role last November. In his interview with KTOO's Alex Solomon, Ingersoll talks about the changes he's leading Alaska Forest Service staff through, including the impending consolidation of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Tongass Forest Plan revision.
What is your vision for this role?
This is a period of change, and it is my job, I think, to keep the boat upright and the passengers in. There's changes in national policy associated with changes in political leadership. And it's my job as a professional civil servant not only to implement those changes, but also to take care of the people and the communities involved.
Over the summer, USDA Secretary Rollins announced the consolidation and restructuring of the USDA, and the USDA made statements to the press that several Alaska Forest offices will close. What is the timeline for that reorganization? Do you know what's going to happen?
I don't. And that's probably the largest piece of that answer, is that I don't know. The announcement of the secretary's decision and of moving forward with the reorganization has not yet come. And I'll hear about it when the rest of you do. And I'm in an acting regional forester position because that's part of this interim organization. I'm filling in until this larger reorganization takes place. Many employees left the agency over the last year, more in Alaska, even as a percentage of our organization, than in some other parts of the country. And so we've got people stepping up, covering for their departed colleagues.
Let's talk about the Tongass Forest Plan revision, which has been underway for a while now. Can you just go ahead and share where we are at now with the revision and what the next steps are?
We expect within the next few months, maybe less than that, to publish a notice of intent to begin revision of the Tongass Land Management Plan. As you say, that's been anticipated for a while. So I would anticipate after the notice of intent gets published that we will host public meetings and engagement sessions around the Tongass, around Southeast Alaska this spring. I'd expect that we will engage federally recognized tribal governments in government-to-government consultation. We've already begun that process, but we'll do so even more as we officially launch the revision. And then we are hoping to complete the process and revise the forest plan over the next couple of years.
Some federal comment periods have been expedited. Do you expect a shorter public comment period than has happened in the past for this revision?
You know, I think it's too early to know for sure. We want to fully engage people in the development of their plan for their forest. And we don't want to spend all of our lives on planning and not on doing.
That was U.S. Forest Service Acting Regional Forester Jerry Ingersoll talking with KTOO's Alex Solomon about the consolidation of the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Tongass Forest Plan revision. And Alaska is launching pilot programs in Anchorage and Juneau to offer addiction treatment in mobile care units. Emergency responders will give people medication to help them make it through a critical window when overdose survivors are at a high risk of dying. Alaska Public Media's health reporter Rachel Cassandra has more on how the programs can help people get into recovery.
Dr. Jennifer Pierce shows off a new SUV.
It is not really marked.
For the Anchorage Fire Department's pilot program.
People. We want people to see us as a beacon of help.
Pierce has a simple mission, to treat Anchorage residents who overdose and connect them with care afterwards. For the first time in a mobile unit in Alaska, responders can give patients the medication buprenorphine.
For when we respond on scenes, we can provide that very quickly.
Which reduces withdrawals and can get patients on the road to recovery.
We don't want people to fall through the cracks.
Narcan, or naloxone, is used to reverse overdoses, but it puts people into withdrawal. And research shows that offering that second medication, buprenorphine, makes it more likely patients will enter long-term recovery. But Pierce says even if people don't continue treatment, the medication reduces the risk of a second overdose in the days immediately following, a dangerous window, according to research. She hopes the program saves lives.
Even if it's just one life, right? We're saving lives out there and preventing individuals maybe from overdosing the next day or overdosing again later and dying.
Pierce visited successful programs in Texas and Washington for ideas and best practices to replicate in Alaska. Seth Workentine is an addiction medicine specialist in Juneau and consulted for the pilot there. He says offering patients buprenorphine has several benefits. It lasts much longer than Narcan, at least 24 hours, protecting people from re-entering overdose. And he says buprenorphine reduces feelings of withdrawal.
And withdrawal is an extremely uncomfortable experience, hated by almost everyone who's ever experienced it, and is often a barrier to people seeking treatment.
But buprenorphine is an opioid, and Werkentine says he's heard critics of programs like these argue that it's just swapping one drug for another. But he says buprenorphine is different, and over time, it actually reverses the brain changes that happen with addiction.
So it's not replacing one for the other, even though they're in the same category. It is actually part of healing.
He says that's integral to the recovery process. Dr. Quigley Peterson says he's also seen the healing benefits of buprenorphine. He's an emergency room physician heading Juno's mobile pilot program. He says he's confident it will do well, partly because he's seen how helpful the medication can be in the emergency room.
We have something that can help engage people that's super safe and it's cheap and that it works.
He says they'll collect data over the year to see what happens to patients after they're given buprenorphine for an overdose. His hope is that it reduces emergency room visits and calls for emergency medical care. And he says that would be good for the mental health of emergency responders too, who get burnt out responding to the same patients over and over. He says if you can get them into long-term care,
then you won't need to see them in the future. You won't have these recurrent EMS calls.
If the pilots are successful, Peterson's goal is to inspire similar programs in more communities across Alaska. In Anchorage, I'm Rachel Cassandra.
And at the Juneau International Airport, it's 25 degrees with a few clouds over the next couple of days. The weather's expected to be sunny during the day and clear at night. For more news, head to ktoo.org. Thanks for listening to KTOO.